Hello. Hello, everybody. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Jamil. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Standing here in the sun.
Very nice. Well, I want to welcome all the listeners to the Alchemy of Light broadcast, and I want to make a special acknowledgement to our listeners that I call our friends in high places, and welcome the ancestors, and welcome the friends that we call interdimensionals, extraterrestrials, spirit guides, all of the beings that constantly travel with us and through us that help us to navigate this very interesting human experience on planet Earth at this time. So I want to welcome everybody and welcome all the listeners, the new listeners, and all the faithful followers of you and your great work. So welcome all. And today we have, as some of you know, a fantastic person, Anthony Kane, is our guest today, as he has just said hello, and he's in the sun and feeling the good earth all around. And would you like to share a little bit of your own bio with people who are tuning in to the first for the first time to know a little bit about your story, bring them up to speed at all, or would you like me to do that?
Oh, wow. I don't know where to start. You start me, Jamil.
Okay, well,
Give me a jump start here.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll start where I started with you and learning about you through an interview with Alfred Labermont Weber. And he shared with all of us that you are a cousin of Martin Luther King, that you were, in fact, a master tailor until 2001, roughly, and that what brought you to his sphere of work is your encounter with the Council of Twelve in the year 2003. And the Council of Twelve is an interdimensional group that are very well known, actually, in those who ponder such things or have had the incredible fate of encountering them, to which followed in 2005, being tortured and destroyed materially by the CIA, and then you fled the country and have since been reintegrating yourself in your higher self, in the integrating of the awareness and the information, the higher sphere, now that you have found yourself as a result of all of that. That is my basic synopsis of how I met you. Does that sound about right? Please fill in the
Wow,
gaps and
and your name
add
is
and all that.
Anthony, you said.
Anthony
Is it?
Kane.
Oh,
And I
you're
was.
okay. Hi. I am so pleased to meet you.
Thank you so much. And I was born in Detroit, was I?
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. Boy, you're really good at that.
Well, thank you very much.
No,
Well.
I think you hit all the salient points, Jamil, and it's a story that I don't go into much, you know. It's just the road I had to travel. And you know, there are times when I still don't understand the why of it. You know, the why always escapes us. No matter how much we ask to know it, it still always eludes us until the time comes when we actually have walked through the fire. But I'm here. I'm alive and well, getting older, grayer, and still just carrying on for however long I have left here on the planet.
Well, I would like to move from the encounter with the Council of Twelve, and particularly if we might begin there in exploring what the interdimensional versus extraterrestrial Let's start with a little extraterrestrial interdimensional 101 for the good listeners, and then take it from there. And I'm feeling inspired there because so much of your wisdom is inter-slash-multidimensional that spans not only our Earth and the totality of our Earth socially, but also our Earth in placement within the cosmos and the shifts of the Earth within the cosmos. And to better understand that, I think it's really helpful to have a grounding in our reality, really, of being part of a larger universe community. And so connecting with the Council of 12 will certainly be a crash course in that, no?
Well, the council who are literally what's known as the Council of Elders, are creator gods. I guess you could say that they were the breath of the dragons. I don't remember the name of the dragon, but a source, you know, divinity, the ether gave life first to the 13-headed dragon. And she, each one of those heads, breathed out a universe and a dragon as well. And from there, the universes were created, and the beings that were created by the dragons were the councils. Most of them councils of 12. Well, actually, it's a council of 13, because there is a 13th in the council. And these are the creator gods, as we might call them, or the creator ethos, as I call them. They are multidimensional. They span, for us here in 3D, it's really difficult to imagine that you can stand right here in the center of what we call the park, and literally be in the center of everything that exists everywhere in any time, any place, any space, multidimensionally, all over all the universes and all the galaxies and all the cosmoses. So there is so much more to the eternal than we can actually even fathom, considering that we only see 0.005% of what is visible light here on this planet. Anyway, the council came to me. It was an encounter that was pleasant, otherworldly, other-dimensionally. And when they left me, what they left me with was a group of eighth dimensional beings that have been my guides and that watch over me. They keep the cabal from bothering me, and they impart a lot of wisdom. And at times they let me falter and trip and stumble and bruise my knees. So there's a lot out here that we are all connected to. There is not one person on the face of this planet that does not have ET contact, Jamil. We all have it. They are our angels, our guides. They are sometimes the voice of our intuition. We are all connected to off-worlders. So everyone has contact.
Okay. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
No, go ahead.
Well, I wonder if you would please review for us exactly what happened so that the new listeners will have a full scope of what that is. There are, I believe, a number of people, a growing number of people who are now having contact, and I feel, as part of ethical media production, one of the most important things that we can do here as a team is to be a source of guidance for people who are having this experience, who maybe don't know the language of it and are questioning themselves. And as you know, when you have one of these experiences, it leaves you changed. And so it can be very challenging to relate to the world that you used to know. And you can tell us from your own experience about that. So for the people who are being contacted, which I feel there are intuitively, I just feel like there are a huge number of people being contacted that are not sure what happened to them. So if you could share with us a little more detail about what exactly happened, how did you know that this was a group of interdimensionals and or otherworldly people, as you say? How did you know that? What were the things, the signature things that clued you in?
Well, I will tell you, as long as you promise to bring me back to that last tidbit there about people in contact, because there's something important there to be said. It started in about 2002, Jamil, in my room in Washington State. And it started very simply by me noticing that the shadow on the wall, as reflected by the sunlight coming in through the window, that the window and the light coming in did not correspond to the shadow on the wall. And I watched it for days as the shadow actually moved. It had fluidity to it, and it would fill up, and it would move across the wall. And that went on for several days as I watched this shadow, wondering what it was, what it would do. And as I did that, I began to notice other things moving outside the window, in the fence and the wall of the house next door, and it appeared to be beings of some kind. Not that you could see them, you know, as human, but definitely some kind of humanoid. And after maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, they began to talk to me. I don't remember what the conversation started like or started from, but they just started talking to me. And it just seemed seemed ever so natural to have these conversations. They just were there. As that went on, there was actually a small gray who came to see me, and he literally took station up in the wall of the house next door so that I could look out the window and talk to him. And that went on for a couple of weeks. And then they begin moving a shadow into the corner of my room. And it's like I would come home just so I could watch this show. I had this whole show going on in my room every day. I didn't have to pay for it. I just had to be there. So as this shadow began to fill one corner of the wall, the next thing I knew, I was watching this holographic being coming into view. And it turned out to be a 7-foot-tall reptilian, Assyrian reptilian. And he had the most beautiful, beautiful cobalt blue skin and these red markings on his shoulders and on his flanks and his horns and his tail and yellow patches across his arms and the back of his neck and little tips of yellow on his horns as well. He was beautiful. He was just so beautiful. And he talked to me, and he stayed there with me in that room for months. I can only imagine that his whole purpose was to acclimate me to the things that I would experience. But I never had any problem. He was just wonderful. I fell in love with him, really. And after many months of this and many months of looking up and seeing hundreds of beings in my backyard, all holographically, you know, sitting there, watching me, talking to me, just everywhere. It was like they showed up and it was a party and everybody was there. And after many months of this, one evening I was guided, asked to go out to the garage. And as I said, I lived in a house where a fairly good-sized house, and it had a four-car garage with a shop at the back of it. So it was a large structure. And you'd go out through the kitchen door. And I went into the garage. They bade me to close the door. I did, and when I closed the door, the garage went completely black. There was not one ebb of light coming from any crevice or crack anywhere at all. And within seconds, I knew that I was no longer in the garage. I was somewhere else. And I looked up over my head to what it would have been the right front corner of the garage, which was no longer there. And there was this huge ship hovering about 30 feet in the air above me. And Rap came down out of the ship, and the holographic beings that I had been used to seeing in the yard and in the house and around me, they came down the ramp first. Some of them, I think there were 8 of them. And after they came down the ramp, then these beings came down that they didn't walk. They floated. Nothing moved except their whole form. And they were 9 feet tall at least, very slender, very lean, all gray, not a light gray, not a dark gray, just gray, with sort of almost triangular wedge-shaped heads, very big eyes, no nose, no mouth, no ears, and I didn't see hands, although they had arms. And there was just no fear. And as they came down the ramp, they formed themselves into two rows of six with me standing in the middle. And I looked up at them after they had assembled, and I said, "So who are you and what do you want?" And they said, "Well, we are here to give you our approval and for you to give us yours." And from that moment, for the next hour and a half, I had no idea what happened in that garage. So that's been many years ago.
And when did you return? How did you know you came back? Did you just return in the garage and suddenly the light was returned to this dimension? Or how did you know it had ended?
I literally woke up with my hand on the knob to the door, going back into the house, and there was light on in the garage now, and there was just a faint residue of what was there, and I could still hear them saying to me, "We will see you or talk with you soon." And I said, "All right, I will see you later, and goodbye." And I stepped back into what was my world.
And when you were talking to them, this then was building up for some time. This was over a few months of acclimation, of growing awareness, of engaging your consciousness, your attention. So this didn't just suddenly one day you're out in the garage and then, woo, there you are. Not at all. This was actually a process. This was a warming up and then an entry and then a continuation. I think that's a very important distinction and also to share, because so often when we hear the stories, we hear the sensational climax of it all, you know, and then it's like, wow, it all happened like that. But there's actually a little more to the story. So thank you so much. And when you were talking with them, Was it words or telepathy, or how was your talking? When you say talking, do you recall a language or?
It's all in English, because they know I speak English. It's okay. All telepathic.
Okay.
I mean, you know, over the years after that, the next 2 years after the after meeting them or that encounter there, they came to me several times. I've seen over the years the council has shown up for me probably a dozen times here on the planet, and that doesn't include the three times that I have seen them once out in some universe. I have no clue what universe it was. Once actually in the multidimensional universe of Sirius, and then once on the planet Sirius as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Sirius, I have this connection to Sirius. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. They are so benevolent and so loving, and yet the love is it's not syrupy. It's not over effervescence or anything of that nature. It's not what we can ever literally fathom as 3D beings what that kind of unconditional love is like. But to feel it coming at you, it's wow, and it's something that you don't necessarily get, or at least I didn't get it in that moment, but I did get it as I've gone along. And so for those couple of years, they would show up here and there. They would help me when I was in a situation that there was nothing else and no other being that could intercede. Over the years, after seeing them prior to the torture, I have had so many different races of dark force beings come after me that you just could not believe it. They would embed creatures under my skin, and you could watch these things literally crawling up my arms and my legs, making their way from my heart.
Mm. Yeah. All right.
And these are the times when I was where the eighth dimensional beings that were around me could not stay off the ones who were after me. And the council would show up and intercede. I say all of this just to say I know my truth. And my truth can never be the same for anyone else. I wanted you to bring me back to a point. People are having more contact, Jamil.
Mm.
And yet, a lot of this contact today is to be, one must be very, very cautious.
Mm.
We are being flooded and bombarded by the cabal and their dimensional lackeys, their third, fourth, fifth dimensional lackeys that run the control center, the moon matrix, and the ones that run the control center for the control center of the planet, which is Saturn, and their matrix. So we have all these beings who are dark forces, as I call them, that are interfering in the awakening of humanity. And as such, since most people have not had, nor do they understand, nor are they willing to believe, not believe, no, that's an awful word, nor are they willing to know what they know from within. And because they will not trust themselves, they are prey to these beings who are manipulating the consciousness of humanity as it rises to its fulcrum for ascension. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, it does. Would you please clarify what you mean when you say 3, 4, 5, 8 dimensions? What is a dimension? We hear this a lot, and I know there are a lot of questions about this, and it's a good segue to ascension and what the planet is we're set up for right now. How do you mean a dimension? And we are, you know, understanding that the bulk of humanity has been fixed down, meaning they are very identified with their bodies and their personalities and their bank accounts and the accolades and the numbers and names and letters after all their names and all these things. So we're talking about this ascension of a species that has basically believed and impassioned that they are their bodies. So the idea of a dimension, when you really are so identified with all your body and all that your body is connected to, this is a pretty mind-blowing thing, you know, and being thrust as things will be thrusting us at increasing intensity, you know, beginning now, I feel like this is a really good thing to explore a little bit more in depth about what is a dimension, you know, how do we know 3, 4, 5, 8 dimensions. What does that mean, you know?
Well, Jamil, I literally am not the best person for that.
Okay.
I will give you what I know. I know that in this dimension here, where everything that we think that so much, you know, the trees and everything we make and our bodies, everything that our five senses relates to is only a sliver of what is visible within just even our own dimension. Being that where we are here, we are, there's a word for it, in many ways, where we are in this sort of prison, where our DNA is not turned on, where we are connected to the ether or connected directly to source, then we cannot go out into all there is, or out into the source, out into the eternity or the ether of life, and see all that there is. So we are locked into a place, a space, where we can only see from our senses. If we are in 4D or fourth dimension, it is a matching sort of vibration of a higher plane than where we are, where they are still living in the body, yet because they are still body-based, and yet they have the abilities that we do not have here, such as telepathy, astral projection, being able to create and move and travel without anything or vehicles and all of this material substance, although they do have material stuff, although it is not a necessity life there. It is a choice. And then if you move into 5D, the fifth dimension is where you really traversed all of this as we know it, stuff that we call tangible, where in the fifth dimension, you are in a place of love, a place of the heart. And so all of this drops away. There's no need, no want, no desire, no misery, no pain, no injustice, no intolerance. There's none of that because you have come into a place, a space of love. There's no time. There's no calendars. And from there, it is an evolution of your consciousness. So each dimension, as we call it, is literally just a place, a space, a realm within which your consciousness, your awakefulness is bound. And accordingly, as we are waking up now, our consciousness is moving towards, it is connecting to, it is striving to be in a fuller expression, and that fuller expression is in another dimension. That means that you just transcend it because your essence transcends it, your soul. So if you can see yourself as a being of absolute, let's say, light and energy, because that's what we are. We are eternal energy. If a being can see themselves as an expression of eternal energy, sitting off, floating somewhere in the ether of nothingness, the void from which everything comes from, and connect themselves to that being, and see and feel the pull of your own being within you connecting to that source that is you, then you actually are experiencing the dimensional shift. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You did pretty good there, mate. Thank you. And the common denominator seems to be the love energy. When you were sharing with us about the contact with the council and the expression of the 5D, the reality of love, that it seems to be the connector when there is love present and the unconditional love, not the sex-based love, you know, that we get so bombarded with in the media and all that, you know, love doesn't require making out, actually. In fact, you can actually have love or not if you are having sex, right? So we're moving completely away from that body-based idea of love being a physical thing to a whole new concept of love in an unconditional environment or an unconditional expression, which seems to be the connection. It's also interesting that is what near-death experiencers every time they comment on exactly that, encountering a profound love, and it leaves you changed. You don't come back the same when you realize that there is a higher reality, a reality of unconditional love that you can personally access, that you actually have been there, so you know you can get back, you know? So,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. People, every being can access the dimensions. I mean, yes, we are in a prison, a poison apple, so to speak. We are caught in what's known as the moon matrix. Yet, every time you close your eyes to go to sleep and you are seeing those visions or just blank space within you, you are within at that time. And in that moment, in those moments, you are actually in another dimension. So I've had them to do numerous things to my body over the years, healings, and I had them come in and actually replace a hip joint one year. Mm. And when they did it, they literally, there was a rhythm. See, everything is a creation of sound. And the first thing that came into the room when they came to do that replacement was the sound, a rhythm. And the rhythm came into the room, and then they came into the room. The rhythm, the sound, shifted the dimension. And so even though I were lying there physically in 3D, the healing itself took place within the fourth dimension. So the dimensions are always within one another. It is not like you're looking at a circle, a one-inch circle, you know, that's 1 inch in circumference, and then another circle that's 2 inches in circumference, and then another one that's 3 inches in circumference, and that's the third, fourth, and fifth dimension. All of them are within one another. It is just us being able to transverse that, transverse this reality here, where we can see beyond this narrow spectrum of visible light. When you get out of the five senses and into your heart, then you can see at any time into the other dimension.
Well, how do you, isn't that a bit contradictory if you say get out of your five senses and get into your heart? If they're all within each other, then are not the five senses likewise a part of the heart expression, or at least have that potential? I mean, it seems like part of what we're doing here is we're mending this break between the 3D and the higher dimensions that has separated the sensual expression of the human, the sensual reality that is part of the heart, no? And how can that, all the dimensions, be within each other, but not our five sense reality and our body not be part of our heart? How can we get out of that and get into our, that's just not making sense to me.
Well, the five senses, you know, are used as a control system. You know, our sense of touch, sight, hearing, oh my goodness, I can't
smell.
Call the five senses now.
Yes, I understand that, actually. Smell.
Okay. Yeah, smell and
yeah.
Taste.
Right.
Taste, yeah. Taste, touch, sight, hearing, and taste, touch, sight, hearing, and smell.
Right.
Okay. We are trapped in our five senses. The perfect example, and actually David Icke uses this example a lot, a person that is a racist is totally trapped in their five senses, all right? They use their sight to condemn another being that is the same as they are just because they look different.
Okay.
We do the same with our hearing. We hear someone with an accent or with a lisp or some other thing that we might deem an infraction, and we relegate them to another status other than being a being here on the planet with us and an equal member of all of us. We do this with our senses. If someone, if you meet someone and they've got too much hair on their body and you touch and I don't want to do, okay. So that person is completely pushed off because they don't touch right for you. Now, I understand that these are intrinsic to who we are, yet those senses are used to control us. So So you see all of these people. You get on public transit these days, and you see everyone's got their iPod or their iPhone or their BlackBerry, and they are totally locked into two or three senses. That's exactly what they want. Because as long as you're locked into your senses, you cannot elevate yourself beyond your physical domain. You are trapped in your body. So those guys on their iPods or iPhones and their BlackBerries, rather, they've got their touch sense going. They've got their sight sense going. And if they're talking on it or listening to their whatever they're listening to, they've got their hearing sense going. Those three senses are being inundated, and they are inundated with advertisement and buy this and television and the radio and the this and the that and the horns and the frequencies. Our senses are being inundated because they keep us from rising to who and what we really are. It's an entrapment.
And then moving from this sense of entrapment, let's work with that example of the, you know, the new breed of people with things dangling from their ears. They literally look like another species to me, you know, their new hands are fixed in this position, you know, I've had these funny musings. They're going to be born like that, you know, they're pretty soon they'll have things born. Well, they'll be born with little things hanging out of their ears and their hands fixed in this position. Because they agonize over putting that little thing even in their purse or their backpack, you know, they have to hold it, you know.
Yep.
So this is a really good example of an entrapment in those sensory reality. So what would the process be then to move into the heart? And I'm still trying to understand how the heart is separate from this. And the heart is our expression of who we really are, or how?
Well, the heart, for me, the heart, when the heart rules as opposed to the head, then everything falls into balance. When your heart rules, then you are not seeking that approval or that gratification or that appreciation or that verification or that nullification, as many do, of who you are and what you are from everything outside of you. When your heart rules, you are able to be still, to sit within yourself, to feel the breeze on your face, and to know that all is as it is, as it should be, as it can be. You are able to view yourself no matter what's going on. You know, Jamil, I bitch and moan and groan a whole lot. I've had one hell of a hard life these last few years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, somewhere within me, in the core of me, I know that it is all right. It has its purpose. And that whatever that purpose is, I still have this guidance taking me there. So I generally tend to spend more time within me than I do without me.
Without you meaning worrying about what other people are thinking about you, worrying about...
No, less time in the gratification of my five senses.
Okay.
So I am a vegan. I watch what I eat. There's smells I can't stand. I may have a cigar here and there, but other than that, I don't do any drugs. I am self-contained and content to be who I am, no matter what else is going on, no matter how hard it may seem, no matter how difficult the road may get. no matter what is anyone else may be thinking about me. Yes, it affects me, but and still, in the end, I am still me. I own this being, and there is nothing outside of me that is any stronger than I am. And this is where I feel all the beings on the planet should need to come to, that place of there's nothing outside of me that can own me. Not the alcohol, not bigotry, not sex, not the movies, not my iPhone, not my job, nothing. There is nothing outside of me in this world that can own me. I own me. This belongs to me. Every fiber of my being is mine.
And would you call that, in a nutshell, sovereignty of being?
Oh, yes. In a nutshell, yes. Because sovereignty is something that... Sovereignty is actually the place where we should be. That is what will allow... That is a big part of this transition. Because sovereignty is about you belonging and being and knowing all about who and what you are. And when you are that way, then you walk forth in the world in your place of strength, your place of power. All right? And your power emanates from within. It doesn't come from outside of you. Okay? So when we speak, when people speak of sovereignty, the whole sovereignty movement, I'm into it. I'm a part of it. Yes, I want to claim myself from the cabal that has created this straw being. But the whole process that is growing, spreading like wildfire across the country and across the land, is literally because people, or all of us, are sovereign anyway. And we have been fooled into believing that we are a society. We have been fooled into believing that we have to be governed. We have been fooled into believing that we are not responsible enough to take care of ourselves, to know our own dominion. And that is all a crock. So sovereignty is you knowing that you know how to walk through the world and do no harm to another man or another woman or another being, that you know how to give respect, that you know how to be tolerant, that you know what justice is. You know, these things are all intrinsic to who we are. They are all intuitive. They are all knowing. And they are all natural. And so when, once again, going back, when we are locked into the realm of the five senses, we are totally devoid, totally divorced from who and what we truly are. Sovereignty lives in your heart. And anyone doing all that paperwork, you know, the notice of notice and claim of right and the power of attorney and the copyright and the UCC-1 filing, I'm doing all of that. Still, even in doing all of that, in order for it to work for you, sovereignty must settle itself in your heart. One day I looked up and I was in the process and going through documents, and suddenly I felt it. It came into me like a light, and it settled itself directly in my heart, and I felt it, and in that moment, I knew that I was a sovereign being. Whether I had papers or not, that sovereignty emanated from me, and I could feel it pour out through my whole ethereal body and touch the world. And from that moment, I knew that that's what I was.
I would like to know how you developed your sensitivity in these realms. Obviously, you had some kind of sensitivity to recognize the council's approach and things like that. Were you ever a meditator or anything like that? I mean, where did your sensitivity come from? You are also an empath, so would you say all this came from your empathic abilities, or how did you develop this sensitivity to knowing the difference? Because what you're speaking of is well said, and yet the process of engaging that and recognizing that, it's quite a piece of work. That is a tall order. And so I'm really curious how you engaged that awareness, how you developed that sensitivity in yourself. Was it, I know you well enough to know you didn't decide to go to the ashram and say, oh, I'm going to be all detached from my five senses now, you know, oh, give me grace. You know, I know that is not the way you would do anything. So we know that. So what do you do when you're just, you know, in the spirit of your life and you're saying, wow, this has changed now? I mean, you know what I'm asking?
Well, you know, actually, Jamil, I opened up a Cracker Jack box and I got a fortune. It told me I was going to be an empath.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? And you were a child, and you opened the Cracker Jack box, and the fortune said, you are going to be an empath.
That's right. And there was a fortune cookie that came later, so. But no, Jamil, what it is for me, you know, I have to say this, that, you know, there are many people on the planet who know a lot more than I do. They can give you facts and references and this and that, and they've got all their ducks in a row. I don't have that. I can read information and turn around and not even remember what I read 5 minutes ago. Okay?
Reading meaning when you're doing a reading for somebody, because you do offer empath readings, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do empathic readings, and I most times, 95% of the time, when I do a reading, I come back, I might have anywhere between 7 and 15% of what took place there. You know? So what goes on for me, and I actually had something happen yesterday over a picture. I think I told you about it. And I sent an email back saying that I apologize, because a lot of times I am just unaware. There are a lot of things that people in the world, on the planet, find so purposeful, find that their whole essence of their being is wrapped up and wrapped around it. And I'm coming into this place where I know that those lapses for me are just a trade-off for what abilities I do have. And these abilities, you know, when I was a little boy, Jamil, I remember when the veil came down. I really do. Up until that time, I was this happy-go-lucky child. And then the veil came down. I was like 6 years old. I remember the moment exactly. And suddenly, there I was, this little boy in the world. And I was terrified. And it has been just an upheaval since then. Okay? All right. So what I'm saying is, I know that what I came into this life for, I brought with me. And there are others like me here on the planet, others like you here on the planet. There are many of us in different varying degrees here on the planet. Some of us have absolute insight. Some have full conscious awareness. Some only have partial conscious awareness. Some are here to be the orators who will tell the story that will move some of the masses into consciousness. And still, there are many that just are here in their states of humanity, and because they are human beings that are tied to the planet. I've got little boys going by. Human beings who are tied to the planet, incarnated here, their energies were birthed here, and they are a newer life, maybe not as aware because they have not had that the millenniums of reference to hold on to. So everyone has the connection. Everyone's connection is different. It is never the same for any two people anywhere on the planet. It can't be. We are all sovereign. We are all a full, complete, eternal energy unto ourselves. And as a complete, eternal energy, then we can merge our eternal energy with all the rest of the eternal energies, all the rest of the stars. And from there, you get to glean what they know and what they have and what they've experienced and what they've felt. All right? So that brings us into this totality of what we all are. We are not this body here on this planet. We are eternal. We are a force of life, not a life force.
Phew. That's a lot. And so that means that here I was thinking that I was born to parent A, parent B, and then I came here, and then that was the beginning of it all, and now suddenly, or not so suddenly, but there is a period now where we are being offered more people like yourself who are sharing with us the bigger picture of who we really are. And when we say who we really are, it isn't just an enhancement of our, you know, parent A and parent B reality. Our who we really are is actually a part of the cosmos, the logic of cosmos, if you will, the web of itself, the web of life itself, and our place in it. And so in that reality, how is it that we discern ourselves as unique? And what is the difference between, say, a person who is evolving from the planet and has what I would call a younger soul, you know, the souls that are just evolving, just getting started. And then the souls, there are many different kinds of soul bodies. So even within this web of life that we find ourselves now in our who we really are category, we do have a unique signature of some kind, or don't we? I mean, is that the price partly that we pay when we say, okay, well, I'm not this personality at all?
It comes back around to one thing once again. Consciousness. Consciousness is that state of being awake and aware, awake and aware, awake and aware. And each facet, each one of us is a facet of the eternal energy. Each one of us is a facet of all there is. So if you were to take the biggest diamond you could find, and it had 100,000 different points on it. Each one of those points would be one eternal life or one eternal energy. And yet and still, each one of those points or facets on that diamond makes up the whole of the diamond. And that is the way we are. It is like the grid on the planet, the 144,000 grid. Each point on that grid makes up the fabric of the grid for the planet. And without each one of those points, the grid would not exist. All right. It is the same for each and every one of us. We are consciousness. We are eternal energy. We have never been born. We can never die. We will live forever. We are all there is, all there ever was, and all there will ever be. And that is eternal. So our consciousness, as we think of it, does not exist. We cannot fathom it. I cannot give you, and anyone who thinks that they can is fooling you. No one can give you the concept of eternity and consciousness outside the realm of 3D. The only being who can do that for you is you. And when you are in your states, your sleeping states, your waking states, your states of meditation, your states of astral travel, your states of astral projection, in all those states, each one is a different place, a different state in your conscious awareness. If you can fathom how many different places your consciousness actually is at any given moment, on any given day, at any given time, then you can begin to see the fabric, the weave of the fabric that is you. So therefore, you are the one who can see this, feel this for yourself. No one else can do that for you. No one can give you a verbal description of what it is. Am I being clear with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, very clear.
Okay.
Very clear.
You know,
yeah.
I have this thing that here a couple of weeks ago, there was an energy shift on the planet. I felt it so intensely, all right? So very intensely did I feel this shift in the energy. And for the next 3 days, 3 days, 4 days, My ability, this empathic ability I have to be able to read people, you know, it was heightened. I mean, it was just like, whoa, you know, would you please turn this off? Okay.
Oh, dear.
You know, and so I'm walking through town or I'm riding my bike or I'm on public transit and I could immediately sense just how locked into the five senses most people are. 95% of them are locked into their senses. No matter how ethereal they speak of life and their understanding or what they think, understanding, oh God, that is also a word that we should eliminate from our vocabulary, all right? Remember, any time a police officer says, do you understand, you make sure you tell him no.
Okay.
Okay. That is, just remember that. No, I don't understand. No, I do not. Anyway.
Okay. Put that in the Anthony guidebook on Planet Earth. Well, let's take this segue to what is going on in our planet. This is also a good let's take a little segue here and offer your websites, and then I would really like to take this to these planetary shifts and the process of the planet itself for our last 45 minutes we've got here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yes, I just got my website up. I said 2 months ago on the blog that I was going to get it up, and Chris, the husband of the couple I'm staying with, he put it up for me. I had to tweak it, but it's up, it's at http://jakane.cc. And what it is, it's just me as an empath. So on there you'll find a home page, and on the home page I'll probably change that, or my sense is to change the writing there, you know, as I feel it, like I used to do with the blog. So I'll use the blog, which is the same address, then slash blog, so jakane.cc/blog. The blog I will use to post from now on events and things that are happening on the planet and with people that, you know, that I just feel people should know. And I will use my my website and post on the home page things that come from me. Then there is the empathic page, which gives you a description of what I do. My ability to be able to help people in their situation. And then I also have on there my professional resume, you know, as a tailor, because I am a master tailor. And some links to the interviews, the one I've done with you, the ones with Alfred and Ms. Muggsy. So it's in its infancy. I need to clean it up some more. But it is there. So do take a look at it. And as it says, I am available.
Thank you so much. And I really empathize with the birthing of the website thing. They have a mind of their own, and, you know, you cannot force a rose to open. It just doesn't work. So, yay for taking that first step. Congratulations, mate.
I was really, you know, I've had that domain for over 2 years, Jamil, and I've never put a page up before.
Wow.
You know, yeah. So it is good to have it there.
Yay. That's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So, In terms of the planet, in terms of the world, in terms of the universe, our galaxy, and this shift that is happening, I will say this, that there is so much going on. The totality of injustices is running amok. The animals are running helter-skelter, and a lot of them are leaving the planet. A lot of the animals have dimensionally shifted already. This sound technology that they're using to destroy or to beach the whales and dolphins, because whales and dolphins, like seals and walruses, are human. They are here to hold the harmonics of the planet. They keep us safe. They keep the planet safe. And how dare these evil vexins do this to these beings, these sentient beings who voluntarily came here and gave their energy to hold this planet steady? That is just an absolute abomination. It really pisses me off. Still, that is where we are. They knew what they were getting into, and they came here to do this. So I send them my blessings. I really do. But they are. A lot of them have already dimensionally shifted. So what is happening is just mass pandemonium. There's chaos everywhere. The weather is uncertain. There are mushroom clouds over places there have never been clouds. They're spraying the planet with all of these chemicals and chemtrails in order to keep down the level of the frequency of the photon waves hitting the planet, to stop them from hitting the planet so that the consciousness of mankind will not rise. But no matter what they do, no matter what they do, they cannot stop what's happening. It will happen, and that I can promise you. So as we talk here today, the central sun in the center of the Earth, the sun in the center of the Earth, which it amazes me how many people don't really feel that there is something inside the planet. See, once again, it is only what they can see with their visible eyes. So there's a lot of things that can be seen if you allow yourself to go forth and see them. Still, the sun in the center of the planet the core. It's like a magnet, and it's vibrating, oscillating at a much higher frequency, and it's increasing exponentially every day. It is literally linked to our sun that we see rise every day in the morning. And between the two of them, they are increasing the frequency of the planet, all right? The days are getting shorter. Time is collapsing. You can feel it collapsing as we come to this head, you know, this alignment. So what will happen? Well, that I can't tell you. And trust me, nobody can tell you. We can only tell you what we know as our eternal being understands it to be. All right? In other words, what connection I have to guides and off-worlders and traveling through the stars and being dimensionally shifted and teleported and on spaceships, all right, that is my connection. And because of that, I can see my path or parts of my path. I can see that there are others that will walk along that same path, not exactly as mine, but in conjunction with mine, because our paths are so close. They are so similar, all right? And we are all a soul collective. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So since we are... Huh?
Yes. Yeah. I have a question.
So, uh-huh.
Does every planet have a sun in the middle?
No. Not every planet has a sun in the middle.
Okay.
No.
But our planet has a sun in the middle. It's literally like the spark of light that it could turn into a sun. A full sun? This planet might actually become a full sun someday?
Well, the planet, if this is something that I have, this is something that I was told. And once again, I can only say this is what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I remember probably 2 years ago, they swept in one day and snatched me up, my consciousness, and took me out on a joyride, as I call it.
Uh-huh. I love those. Yeah.
Right. And this joyride was to see the new Earth.
Mm.
And man, it was incredible. The water wasn't on the planet. It floated above the planet. It was all on its own. And the land didn't sit on the planet. It hovered off of the planet in different different tiers all over the place. And you could just fly in between. You could fly in between the land and the water. You could be with the land below you and the water above you, or the water on the side of you and the land to the other side of you. I mean, everything, there was nothing tied to the planet. And yet and still, all of it was in this planetary sphere. All right? And I just found it it was amazing. It was beautiful. It was like, wow. This is so cool.
Wow. So everything was, in a sense, floating, and the gravitational pull had shifted.
Yep.
Something like that?
Yep, absolutely. You described it perfectly. And so what I understand is that our sun, the central sun in the planet, and our central sun out there in our galaxy, are intrinsically connected to one another. They are like a husband and wife that are getting ready to get married, and once they get married, you literally merge together, that they will give birth to this new Earth, the Earth that they live on. Because the Earth in and of herself, as we live on it, is literally just the shell of an egg. And the central sun is the yolk. It's the life force. Okay? Hmm. That's where all the life force comes from that is on the top of the planet.
Hmm.
All right? So when the two wed, then the shell will break and the new Earth will be born, and she will become either a new planet. Now, this is where I'm uncertain. And at the same time, I feel that she will become a new planet, that she will also become a star, and that she will also give birth to the other third-dimensional Earth that will remain for those who do not make the transition. That is what I feel, that part, okay? So there are other... There are many other scenarios that many other people are speaking of, you know. There's one other that even I am very strongly tied to, and that is that the intensity of the energetics, the photon waves hitting the planet, are too intense for any life to survive what will happen here on this Earth. And as a result of that, while the Earth goes through her process, every being on the planet will be dimensionally And for those who are not, as I say, awake or conscious, those who are still struggling through this 3D vibration, this density of the five senses, then they will go to bed and they will wake up in a planet that is a carbon copy in many ways of what this planet is, so that they can continue to go on and live out their lives until they learn their lessons. Those who are conscious will shift, as some have already left the planet too. They will shift, and they will shift according to their consciousness, their awareness, their wakefulness, and they will move on into their fourth dimensional reality or their fifth dimensional reality, and there are those who will move into dimensional realities above that, depending on who that eternal consciousness is, what their awareness is, what their place is in the grand scheme of this whole shebang. So the scenarios are multi-cosmic. They involve every planet, every cosmos, every universe, and every being that exists any and everywhere. And how that will play out, there is not one mortal man not one mortal woman who can tell you.
Well, it sounds like a couple of things, that it's going to be individual to the soul growth, to use that word. I know there are a lot of words for that, but I call the eternal being soul. So yes. In my dictionary, the eternal being is the part that is using this human form to experience its lessons and, in effect, evolve the species as a whole. And that's mm-hmm. another road we could go, but I think we're going to stay on this other road right now. So that mm-hmm. part is also really important, because then we don't have to be as afraid. You know, it's really mm-hmm. not about our body, the human body, surviving. No. It's about the eternal consciousness evolving the species we've chosen to come to serve. So it doesn't have to be scary. And if we die of nuclear radiation, you know, that sucks. But there is yeah. some reason in our soul being that we have chosen that. And yeah. I wonder about the parallels that you might be able to draw. For some reason, I was seeing the dinosaurs. And might we be evolving in some kind of a trajectory that the dinosaurs once did, right? We know that there are these big bones, and this other entire reality existed on this planet in these amazingly huge beings. And whether or not humans were there then, I think is still open for discussion personally. But we do have, you know, this common understanding of a time on this planet where there were actually these beings that are no longer here. And might the planet have gone through a dimensional shift at that time? Is that related to what we're going through now?
In many ways, yes. You're covering a broad scope there, my dear.
I know. I try to keep it down.
Yes, I will agree. And, you know, from what I understand, not all of them, the dinosaurs like us were recreated beings. A lot of them were brought here as a food source for the reptilians. Because the first inhabitants of this planet were reptilians. Before Atlantis, there was Lemuria.
Lemuria was a reptilian. Lemuria was a reptilian civilization. And are all reptilians bad, or are they mixed breed, or what is a? You know, can you share just a bit about what is a reptilian race in its diversity?
Well, the reptilian. Well, if you think of humanity, humans live from a survival instinct, the need to survive. We are constantly in a survival mode. All right. Gotta work, gotta make food, gotta do this, somebody's walking up on me, get out of my way. You know, it's always a battle, a fear, a consistent ebbing fear sitting there at the base of everything that's done. There are very few people or very few beings on the planet who actually walk through life without fear. That fear instinct, that survival instinct, is the reptilian in us. It is that reptilian part of our brain. And that reptilian part is the part that the cabal, the dark forces, are always feeding. That's why they feed the five senses. The five senses are primarily connected to the survival instincts and the reptilian brain. And that is what keeps us in this state. Now I need to come back to the question again, Jamil.
Lemuria being the first civilization before the dinosaurs, before any life that we have so far uncovered in a formal way.
Yeah, so the first inhabitants of the planet were the Draco Reptilians. And they came here, at least at least 400,000 years ago. And then came the Atlanteans, who were actually Lyrans that had been chased to Mars, then to Venus, and then into the Pleiades, and some of them kept running and later came and settled here on this planet and created what we have known to be Atlantis. According to what I understand, or what I have been told, there have been 7 different incarnations of Atlantis here on the planet. And I think David Wilcox is probably the better authority on Atlantis, considering that he was a part of that civilization in the last one, the one 25,000 years ago, a very prominent part of that civilization. So that is why the Draconians, the reptilians, lay claim to this planet. That is why they continue to live here and be here. They live here in the hollow earth. And they have been here since the beginning. They refuse to give up dominion over the planet. And they are part of the Orion group. And the Orion group are the Greys and the Argons and the Dracos and other factions from many different planets in the Orion system. And they have been here literally as a dark force of multidimensional beings who are the enslavement apparatus for the planet. Them, and then they have a counterpart on Saturn. Saturn is literally the home of the devil, the big bad devil, the Satan that rules this world. And this instant connection of dark forces hovering around this planet Earth to enslave the energetics of humanity, because we make good food, okay? And I don't mean our bodies. So if one wants to explore the multifaceted history of all the beings here presently, I can think of at least 8 different reptilian races on the planet, and I've seen them out in public. They look like they're human, but they have these moments where they drop their mask, you know? I mean, it is just once again, it is that thing of us being able to decode visible light, and they can project within this realm of visible light the hologram of what it is they want us to see. And there are moments when they drop that veil for an instant, and then I can see them. So we are still inhabited by all these different beings from all over the cosmos. And they are all here. They've always been here. And there's nothing new. We just aren't aware of it.
Well, in our soul being, then, it is possible, are you saying that it is possible for a soul of some variation of a reptilian species to choose a human form? Is that correct? Because if we really look at our existence as soul, choosing to inhabit a human form for a particular purpose, a lesson, whatever that is, then it suggests to me the possibility that a soul from any of these civilizations, intelligences, can use a human form as a vehicle as well. Is that not correct? Okay.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, all reptilians are not dark energy.
Okay, I think that's important to clarify.
No, there are some very wonderful, very loving, very benevolent reptilians, and I have met some of them, and I really like them. They are nothing but love, just profound protectors, creators. The reptilians are real creator gods, much they for sure definitely are. They are what we would call the geneticist, the scientist. That is their forte, you know. And they have given birth to many, many creations, and one of them is humanity, you know. So even though we are a copy of the humanoid form, it is by way of the reptilians that we actually exist in this form, that this form actually exists. Let's put it that way. It is via the reptilians that this form exists.
Because the reptilians were the original geneticists, use that, in that created this human form.
Yes, they are. They are the original architect of this form of humanoid here on the planet.
Were the original creators of this form benevolent or malevolent?
Oh no. Now that is that question is up in the air. The reason I say that is because if you look at the, from what I know, which is just enough to put in a peanut, the races that contributed to the DNA of humanity here on the planet, they were all benevolent races, and the humanoid was to be literally a library and a conduit for the healing of the fracture within all of the multiverses for all the races. In other words, we were to be this conduit whereby the division between light and dark could be healed, where everyone would come into a place of communion. And that essentially was the original purpose for the creation of humans here. And then you had the other reptilians who came in because they wanted gold off the planet, and they found the daughters of men, and they interceded, and they changed the DNA, and they rewrote the code, and they enslaved humanity, and they have dominion over the planet, and have had for the last 250,000 years, you know, 250,000 years of darkness, and we're at the end of that. So those are the real dark forces, the real dark reptilians. And those are the ones that we deal with, the Dracos and the Greys, the Orion group.
So, this is really interesting. Are you familiar with Patricia Corey's work at all?
I've heard of her. And I'm sure that I can see the name in my mind's eye, so it means I've read something.
I want to just put out to the listeners who are finding this storyline resonating with them that I would highly recommend Patricia Corey's book, Atlantis Rising, because what you're saying, it is really so similar to what she wrote, and she is a benevolent channel for the Sirian elders. She is the real deal. She's a lovely, lovely soul in service. And she wrote that book that is so similar to what you're saying that anybody who's resonating with this story might really benefit from checking out that book, Atlantis Rising, especially in this time that we're in. So I want to keep us on point, sort of, how we got off of the, we're at the end of this darkness, as you said.
Yes. We are at the end of this road, Jamil. And whether it be in October or whether it be in December when the planetary alignment happens, or whether it be during the 3 days of darkness, or whether it be next March, or whether it be 10 years from now, this whole cycle of darkness is at its end. They cannot and will not survive, and they know that. The frequencies hitting the planet are too much for them. If I could say something to people or to all the beings out there, because I like referring to us, all of us, as beings, because we are beings. We are not persons, you know, which is literally a slave term. Okay. And we are not a name. We are all eternal beings. But if I could say something that I know that I'm experiencing this tingling through my body, this almost like this prickling that runs down my legs at times while I'm sitting still, like I'm getting little electric shocks all over me. All right, and that is all a part of this ascension process. Our bodies are changing. Our bodies must transform in order for us to transition. Okay? Now, this is unprecedented in the history of humanity for us and our vessels to actually transmutate into a different form. All right? This is brand new. Okay? So we are becoming liquid crystalline entities, all right? No longer carbon-based bodies. And people all of us, all right, are in this transition together. You are finding that you're tired, you want to sleep a lot, or you're up early. You got tingles all over, things hurt that never hurt before, and you're too young to know, you can't figure out why. There are a multitude of symptoms. You hear ringing in your ears, you hear tones out of different places, something smells really different to you than it's ever smelled before, and you don't know where it's coming from, you know. There are all of these things, and they are affecting the senses because the body is in transmutation.
And that, when you say all of us, that is every single life form. All of us, yes. Every form on the planet, including plants and rocks and water and dogs and cats and fish and everybody. Yep. Us is everybody, the collective reality, yep. in total, yep. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead. Well, I'm wondering about this agent. I have two questions. Uh-huh. When you're talking about our transmutation from this carbon-based human to a light-based human to the crystalline light-based human, I had the vision. I could see us then working in the new earth, you know, then we could become part of it in a lighter form without that same relationship to gravity as well. I had that fun vision and your description of that. And my questions are a couple-fold. That this is a solar part of this, the solar alignment. And so I'm wondering about a couple of things. Our sun in relationship to the sun in the Pleiadian galaxy, Alcyon. Uh-huh. And I'm also wondering about the increasing light, which I interpret as moving into the photon belt. And I see this light. This light is actually visible. It is visible. Yes. And so I'm finding it just so incredibly obvious now and more so. And how, what is their relationship to this transformation? Is that light the agent, that photon light, might that be the material agent that's catalyzing this?
The photons are what there's another word for this. God, see, that's how terrible I am with remembering things here. Jesus Christ, it's like I need to write everything on my hand so I can remember them.
Then you won't remember where you put it on your hand. Give it up. Come on.
Oh, that's terrible.
Only because I love you. You know, come on.
Anyway, but no, yes, the photons that are coming in from the sun is affecting, the sun is throwing us these energetic waves, these photons, this energy that is what is hitting our stratosphere or our whatever it is out there. Before you get into the space of the planet, and that is transforming everything on the planet, us, everything, because there's nothing that is not sentient. Everything is sentient. Everything is alive. So everything is in that transformation, and the central sun in Alcyon is a part of it. That sun is in alignment or conjunction or a part of our sun. The two are intrinsically linked, okay? It has been said that, and once again, just remember that this ascension is happening everywhere. So all of those hundreds of planets that sit in the Pleiades, they're all going through it too. Every planet in our galaxy, from Pluto and Uranus to Mars and Jupiter and Neptune, are all going through it, okay? Every planet everywhere is going through this ascension process. So there is nothing that is not, that will be untouched by this process, nothing anywhere. It is the process of bringing, of coming into consciousness, communion, well, everything coming into a place of communion. So it is said, or I have heard, that that there is a very good possibility that that when the ascension does come into or get into its final climactic stages, that we will actually end up in a completely different little galaxy, the Earth itself, and that it will have two suns. And one of those could very possibly be Alcyon, and then a new sun. I understand that our sun, which is actually dying, will morph into something as it weds itself with the central sun of the planet. So that scenario, I can't with any credibility or credence of knowledge give you an absolute about it. I can say it is a great grand possibility because Alcyon is intrinsically connected. It is our central sun.
Well, I think that at this point, Anthony, that we are in our, I like the way you put it, moving into communion. That is another way of saying unity to me, you know, that healing our separation consciousness, our idea that I am different than you and that matters, you know, that we can be cruel to another person because we think we're hurting them. And yes. The truth is, we're only hurting ourselves. And that is the gift of remembering the communion, the union, the yes. unity of our beingness. There's uh-huh. really no place for cruelty in unity consciousness, because you just, and in a way you could call it benevolent selfishness, because why in the world would you want to harm yourself? You know,
yes.
something starts to click on that multi-dimensional reality that even squashing a bug matters, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that is all coming into play. And our new Earth idea, oh, God, there are so many ideas out there. And I don't think that any of them are wrong or bad. I really feel like in our growing awareness of our communion that we have an opportunity to come together and listen to each other and really share our truths, share our little piece of the hologram, share our little piece of our understanding. And part of, you know, what will make it easier for everybody is learning how to listen to each other and make space for each other. And, you know, I think that it might be pretty unanimous on a lot of levels. You know, people don't really like being talked down to. People don't like it. You know, we don't like it. We don't like it when people are, you know, pushing their ideas on us, especially with arrogance. I know because, you know, I have all these ABCs, and I know because I'm older than you biologically. And I know, I mean, that is one of the quickest ways to put somebody off, right?
Yes, Jamil, if I may interject here, there is a place within every being. That place is knowing, a knowingness. Everyone has it. Find that place. No, don't find it, because it's not lost. Okay. Tap into it.
It just gets misplaced.
Just begin to live in it. In other words, when something comes up and you feel that you know it, not because you read it or saw it on the idiot box or heard it on the dumb box or any of that, but just because it was a feeling and you just felt it and you knew it, tap into it. And even if it turns out to be different than what you felt you knew, you still have not made a mistake. All you have done is learn a lesson of what that knowingness is more about. All right?
Right.
In that way, you begin to move into your absolute conscious place of knowingness. We all have it. And it is to begin to live there, yes. You can never make a mistake. You can only learn your lessons or not learn them. And if you don't learn them, you get to repeat them. That knowingness exists. Feel it. Let yourself feel it. And walk into it. Let it guide you. And the instant you do that, then it'll show up again the next day. And it'll say, oh, did you like playing yesterday? Well, here, let me give you some more. And you begin to move into it. And that brings about your consciousness and your awareness and your trust in yourself. That is so important. The trust and the truth that you know from within you, no matter what's happening outside. So it is in my school essential that beings begin to live from the knowings and the feeling within them, and to trust themselves to know the truth. Trust yourself to know the truth. Even if you have to tell yourself that every day, I trust myself to know the truth.
Well, trusting of the truth is also part of letting go of what's not true, and that sometimes is the harder part, you know.
Yes. And you are correct there. Yet instead of finding that you have to let go of it, all you have to do, as I say to many of the clients that I have done readings for, we are like a glass of water. As long as we have life, we are always full. Always. We are always a full glass of water. Even if the water is dirty. And how is the water dirty? The water is dirty with all the crap that we've learned to believe, all right? It's a being a lie is belief. To me, that's what belief stands for. I be lie, all right?
No.
Look at how it's spelled. Anyway, because belief, what you believe has nothing to do with the truth. So all of our beliefs that are in this glass of water has the water murky and dirty. And if you want fresh water in a glass of water that's already full, how do you do that? You put the glass under the tap, you turn the water on, and you let it keep running until the glass is full with fresh water. Therefore, you don't have to be concerned about dispelling the dirty water. The fresh water has pushed it out of the way. And it's the same thing with us. If anyone, any being, every day or whatever, has their little mantra, I trust myself to know the truth. And you do this and practice that one little thing. It doesn't have to be some huge monumental thing. It's just a little tiny step. And you keep putting that little step in your glass, your water is going to become clear. You don't have to be concerned with the dirty water. It is our constant focus in the duality of the right and the wrong, of the left and the right, of the up and the down, of the good and the bad, that keeps us stuck and twisting our heads in 10 different directions and scattered and living in a state of survival. When, if you just focus on what it is that you want what it is that you want to fill your glass with, if it's just one little thing, trusting yourself. I'm learning to trust myself. I'm learning to know myself. I'm learning to feel myself. Just those little things, you will dramatically alter your life.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you so much. I am always in such appreciation for your honesty and for your ability to just stay real and just stay constant. And it doesn't matter what state of mind I talk to you in. Some of your good days, some of your bad days, might quote good, quote bad, you know, some of the times, the higher, the lower. Whatever it is, you are so steady. You are so real. And just your ability to sit here with us for these 2 hours and just share. And I know we could go on for five more. We could go on for 24 hours, and it would be the same. It would be the same steady, connected, real energy from the heart. This is my truth. And, you know, wow, thank you so much. And we have a few minutes now. We're not in under any pressure to jump off the air. There's no show. I'm informed by the fantastic people in the back. Thank you, Doug, and thank you, Dawn, BBS Radio, for making this possible. You know, this information is so important, because even if we don't understand all that you're saying, just that we're willing to make a little place in our minds and our heart to welcome any kind of a new way of thinking and being is really enough. That's what you're just saying, is just to make a place so we can be in love with ourselves and even the small steps and how much they really matter. you know, to just make that commitment every day and let ourselves grow. And, you know, I really like that wherever we've gone in this conversation, that we, the love, the unconditional love, we've gone from the unconditional love of the council of elders, and I'm glad that you corrected that, because I think that makes, for me, feels a lot better, the council of elders, and experiencing that unconditional love, and then being able to ultimately offer ourselves that unconditional love in being our own person and learning to be our own person and honoring the cleaning out that we all have to do, because we have chosen to incarnate here on this time, at this time on this planet that is mucky. We've got a lot of crap around here, you know? And we're going to have to really allow our truth and our love to be conduits for the universal love intelligence, that's what I call it, to do some cleaning around. And it really isn't one man's job. It's just our ability to allow our love of, and my belief that our love of self, our love of creation, our love and gratitude for the fact that we even have this opportunity, and that's enough, you know, that's enough.
Yes. It is just you know, Jamil, that I wrote one little line that said, "Be not afraid." There are benevolent forces sitting here, waiting, and mingling and mixing with us to help, and there is always guidance available. Just have to ask yourself, and the planets and the suns and the stars are all here to help us as well, because they are a part of us as well. They know what this is all about. They are gods, all of them, and they are here for our benefit. It is their energies, and they know it. It is their energies that will transform mankind. So we have a whole slew of assistance, a whole slew of benevolent forces available, ready, and working on the program as we speak. Yeah. So I say to people, stop getting caught up in this dilemma of survival. This web of deceit, this money debt system, because that is the enslavement of mankind. You know, free yourself to the best of your ability, and all will be well. And that much I can promise you, all will be well.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you so much. And please share with us again how we can find you, your websites. Tell us a little bit about your reading service, the readings that you provide, and let us know again how we can find you.
Well, I do empathic readings. An empath, you know, people think that that is just totally in simpatico with another being. In some ways, yes. What it is, though, is that I have this ability to be able to see the truth of a person's life, regardless of what they say or do. You know, so, you know, you can stand here and tell me that you are a horse jockey and you make $3,000 a year and you're married to a beautiful blonde. And I, at that moment, can be seeing exactly what's going on in your life. I may not get the whole picture at once, and it may come from a clue of something you're saying. Sometimes a person can say two words, and I don't need anything else. Sometimes they don't have to say anything. I've already got them before I ever talk to them. So I get to literally tap into the ether and know who you really are. And a lot of times that's what people are in this gripe about with themselves. Because the biggest enemy that any of us have is ourselves. Mm. And so when you can't see the enemy, when you can't see what it is from within that is holding you where you are, you don't know what to do with it. And I can see that. And I can tell you, sometimes I can be really bitchy about it, as you know.
You know? A little salt for the wound there.
You know, but it is, once again, it's on a very individual basis. I end up speaking to the person according to what it is that they require so that they get the message, so that they can glean some benefit from what it is that I have to say. And I can do it. I do this. Generally, most of my readings are done by phone or by Skype. You can find me on my website at HTTP or either www.jakane.cc. And just send me a message and I'll get back to you. There are references on there. You can see what or read what I've done for other people. Or it's not me doing it, Jamil, actually. It is really them. Because when I am reading someone, I am very much so in the now, in the very present moment. That's what's so really interesting. That's the part of it that I really, really, really do love, is that I am in the absolute now in that instant, in those moments. If it's 15 minutes, if it's an hour, if it's 2 hours, I am right there in the now. I'm not in the future. I'm not in the past. I am so absolutely present. And in that present, being that present, what I am doing is mirroring for that person, for that being, I am mirroring for them what it is that's going on. And I'm just giving it back to them. And it, you know, however it needs to be given. And so it is literally that being that is allowing their own transformation. That being is allowing me to actually go in and read their soul contract.
So
in a way, how it happens.
You're their voice, then, is what you're saying. The they that empowers you is actually the surrender of their soul to this of this information to you that they allow you to reflect to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it has been over the years that I've done it unconsciously or without a knowingness, let's say, where I was literally asking for permission. And then a few years ago, I began asking people to give me their name and their birth date because it helped sort of place their energy in a corridor where I could pull it out from all the other stuff that I might be getting. And then, but more recently, I literally asked people for their permission to actually read their lives. I find that I don't have to do that always. There are people or beings that come to see me or that I am doing readings for that come to the phone or to the Skype conversation or to the door, and they have that permission written all over them. It's like, hi, come on in. <You know? laughs>
I'm ready now. Let's go.
Those are fun, you know? So, I mean, I do enjoy it. It's stimulating, but there's a great satisfaction of you know, just being able to be of service that way. You know, I'm not a psychic. I don't do fortune telling. You know, that is not my forte. Yet if you are really ready to deal with the truth of who you are and what's going on with you, then I'm definitely your guy.
That's a very important distinction. That's a very helpful. There really is a difference. And yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Anthony, for joining us here.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You're always such a sweetie. And don't you be so long calling me now, girl. I miss you.
Okay. Anthony, it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to share time and to listen. And I'm really grateful that you are with us and that, you know, you got your butt kicked so that you could be with us, because that's something else that I've learned to appreciate in my life, where I reached a place where I was dropped off into what felt like the abyss of darkness, where everything is falling apart, where there's just nothing but pain and suffering. And oh my God, my inner upheaval is just so much. I can't stand being in my own skin. But it's really the step that brings me to where I am now, and all those places I can now appreciate so much more. So in listening to your story, of course, I recognize it. What? You have this encounter with these profound beings. You go through this awfulness with, you know, being tortured, and then all of your reality as you knew it gone. And then this amazing being emerges that I get to meet, and I'm really happy about that. So thank you.
Well, we are simpatico in many ways, are we not?
Oh, we are, Anthony.
Yeah.
Brothers all the way.
Yes, there's much about you that also resonates the same for me. So, you know, I do understand. No, I do see that.
Okay. Because I don't understand, Anthony.
Oh, very good. Yeah. You know,
I was listening.
Yes, you. Well, it's you know, there is let me I think I sent you something. There's a woman called Catherine of Gaia that is really up on sovereignty and divinity. She's got it down. She knows it from her being, not on paper. I mean, even if she's very good with the paper, but she knows it from her being. And then if there are people out there that are interested, there's a guy on the web named Dean Clifford, and he has the sovereignty thing down to a T. Absolutely. Nobody better. You know,
you're
so just a couple of references.
You're talking about the sovereignty on paper, correct?
Well, how to literally take back your persona, your being, from the cabal. All right. So Catherine does it by taking it back from the three city states, Washington, D.C., the city of London, and the Vatican. She goes directly to the beast. Okay. Mm. She pulls no punches. She goes directly to the beast. Mm. The other way is through the corporate regime. Because governments are corporations. There's no such thing as a government. They're all corporations, all right? And have been. Some of them have been corporations since the late 1800s, and some since the early 1900s. But all governments are corporations, all right? Mm-hmm. That's what they are. They are not there as governing the people or as part of a republic. They are there as tax takers, tax masters. what it
minding
what
it, the sheep.
Money, huh?
Minding the sheep.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, so anyone who believes in government, anyone who believes in voting, you know, then it is time for you to decide whether you're going to take the red pill or the blue pill. All right? Mm. Make the decision. All right? You know, either make the decision. Okay? Because all of that is caught in the realm of the senses, and it has nothing to do with the truth.
That is another program. That is a very important conversation to have, and I will pursue those links that you sent me, and I really appreciate that because I'm very passionate about that. That is really a way that we can untangle our consciousness as well as educate ourselves about what we are born into, because we are literally born into the corporation. You know, our birth certificates are actual commodities that are traded on the stock market. I mean, our personhood is considered an asset to somebody's bank account before we're even walking, you know?
Yeah,
and it's a way to, I have found this a way to learn about how it's set up while I'm freeing myself. And I really like that. I like the economy of that, you know, and freeing myself and educating myself at the same time really works for me, you know?
Oh, yes, yes. That's how you get it, you know? Yes, but and today, as I had said earlier, I personally feel that it is really important. Personal sovereignty is directly connected to ascension. You know, because as long as people remain connected to the money debt system, you know, people provide the credit behind what's called full faith and credit. You know, it is their energy, their labor, that gives value to the dollar. You know, that's what this accepted for value means, or exempt from levy. It is that your energy, your labor gives value to the dollar, so therefore you are exempt from levy, and everything that you want or desire is accepted for value. You don't, it's already bought and paid for. And yet we are caught in this money debt system, you know, as Ike says, he calls it manufactured scarcity equals dependency equals control. And abundance equals choice equals freedom. And that is the absolute truth.
So well, and
live,
if we...
Huh?
Go ahead, if we live...
We live in manufactured scarcity, where even the haves, those that have plenty, are always scrambling to make sure that they have more.
Mm.
And those who have not... I mean, we live on a planet of abundance. We were born onto a planet that provides us with everything that we could ever want or ever need for the sustaining of our lives. And why should there ever be any being on the planet who wants for food, shelter, clothing, or the finer little necessities of life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There shouldn't be. And, you know, it's interesting. If we put our multidimensional hat on, okay, and say, looking at exactly what you just said, and I said, we've, you know, brought in this scenario of that we as human beings are born. If we add the multidimensional perspective of us being soul beings choosing to enter the human experience that is in this reality as being commodity of a corporate entity, if we, you know, really cut a lot of, you know, to the bottom line of it, then we feel, I find that I feel more empowered thinking of it like that. You know, when I think of it, whoa, I'm part of this system, and that's a trap. That's a very subtle trap in the sensor, you know, the five sense reality, that, oh, I am this person that is part of, you know, I am owned and operated by this corporation because I'm born into it, when in fact I am an eternal being that chose to come here in this form that is currently being manipulated, that I might be part of its resolution to reclaim its sovereignty in the universe. Yes. Now, then I feel a lot better about it.
Yes, yes. Actually, that was a word I was searching for much earlier, resolution. The fourth dimension is the resolution to what we live here in the third dimension. That's literally what it is, where you live in that state of everything is resolved.
Hmm. Is that intention then?
Yes. Everything resolved. Everything is literally, I can't come up with any other word. It is in the state of being a state of resolution. Everything is resolved. All is well.
That's the knowing. That's living in a state of knowing.
Yeah.
Living in a place of resolve is a state of knowing. And then when you realize that is your power, that is your cauldron of creation, shall we say, you realize that your conscious contribution to this cauldron of creation is the intention that you set. And then your experience in the outer world and the inner world have the opportunity to become more coherent, more obviously related to one another, because you know your intention, because you're consciously setting it. You know what is reflecting in the reality on your inner world and your outer world. And then you are resolved and taking full responsibility, excited, or maybe some variation of, you know, impassioned to move into this next phase, you know, like watching a flower open, or watching if you ever watched a baby bird, you know, I had this amazing experience one time watching baby birds, and, you know, the struggle of a baby bird before it can get its wings and fly, but it has this passion. No matter what, that baby bird wants to fly. And it doesn't get distracted by the fact that its feathers aren't there, so to speak. But to have that kind of a passion for whatever our process is, and just knowing, again, that it is exactly our evolution. That is exactly what we need to be doing. Because the passion for life, for that possibility, for that personal expression of that exact moment, that's the gift. That's it.
Yes, it is the gift. And that is why babies are just such a bundle of joy to us. It is not that they're just small and cute, because, you know, most babies aren't all that attractive, with the little fat legs and...
yeah.
Okay, but it is their natural, instinctual resolution that they push forth to push through all the things around them. They are in another world. And what do? We tame them and lock them into the fear factor and their five senses, especially taste, all right? In order to quiet them down and keep them docile.
Put them in their little box.
So if we were to allow them, if we as guides, because that's what we are, those who have children are guides. Anyone who wants to be a parent, I understand that you know no better. As they say, the word parent means to pay rent, because that's what you do. If you have a birth certificate on your child, you're paying rent. And you don't have dominion over that child. Anyway, Still, but your guides, that's what they are guides. You are guides to the beings that you bring into the world. And if you guide them wholly, then you, yourself, must be a more evolved being in order to allow that being to evolve fully and be all that that it can be, he or she can be. You know, and there are not, there might be 5% of the population that's capable of doing that. But then again, they aren't aware that, that there is a difference. You know, the examples that they see, the way they were raised, what they read in books, the messages that are given to you from every advertisement and every television station, all tells people, tells you how you are supposed to raise these beings that you bring into the world. You know, and I'm on a tangent here. Don't let me go.
He's off. No. The horse is running.
Yes. But you know that, you know, that we call them kids. And kids is actually what a cow is. So they have us calling our children kids, our cows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, English is a word, is a language of spells. Hence spelling, spellbound, you know. The words in English create spells. The words, if you break them down as you, if you're looking at a word, oh, someone, I heard it somewhere a few days ago, the word signature. And if you take the word and you break it down just according to the spelling, it goes sin you sure. So sin you sure. So sure you're sinning by signing this paper, because all documents from the government are fraudulent. A driver's license, a baptismal certificate, a medical card, a social insurance or a social security number, they are all perpetrated on a fraud. And anybody who has one of those documents is a perpetrator of a fraud, all right? And all those documents should be given back to those who hold the title to them, all right? And they should be told, I will not play this game. So anyone who has a birth certificate for their child, you do not have dominion over that child. The state does. And that's why they are able to do all the things that they do to your children, because you don't have dominion. When you signed that birth certificate, you gave dominion to the state, to the corporation, and the corporation is taking its toll. So it is really important today that people, that beings, the humanity on the planet, see this charade that we are living in, that they divorce themselves from it, that they take back ownership of themselves and everything that is theirs, that you have absolute dominion over your being, you know? I can't stress the importance of it. It truly is part of the ascension process.
Wow. Well, that is a very important conversation about those things that are connected to the old world that I call it, reality, that we're leaving, and all that's in a sense the reality that is connected to what has kept us bound in the five sense reality, because all of those worlds, all of those documents, all that stuff is exactly the empowerment, that's like the bars on the windows and the bars on the doors, because all those things we think keep us safe. We have this paper that says we can do this, and we have this paper that says we can do that, but that's the charade that is turning inside out. That's what I feel all of the upheaval that we are going to and have already begun to witness. Anybody who's paying any attention at all has to have noticed the incredible infringement here in America. I'm just talking about what I've observed in America, the incredible infringement or introduction of the government fist. You know, the government's rules, the laws that have been passed in the last 2 years are off the charts in meddling in our personal affairs. And this is really good news because I feel like it's good news because it's going to have ultimately the effect of shaking us from our denial that we live in a free country, because these are the same rules that the perpetrators of this, you know, free country have been imposing since the beginning, but they've had all this time and all these other little facets to manipulate and control people and, you know, funnel this idea, well, you're freer than you would be over there. And then they show you this horrible picture of, you know, Africans that are starving because of corporations based in America that aren't feeding them. Oh, no, forget that. Sorry. any case, I'm just being silly. But the bottom line is that all these things are coming up for our ability to recognize them for what they are and really see that those things are not for the protection or interest of the well-being and the highest good of the people that they purport to serve. And that's why I feel like that is the good news of this. As hard as it's going to be to watch at points, as we, as a collective, really get our heads around the fact that we haven't been that free after all, this is the gift. This is the gift. So I am definitely subscribed to the importance of having the process, and that we have many probable outcomes. There are many things, many ways we can go with this still. And it ultimately is individual to whatever your growth needs to be. That's the place you're going to be. Those are the people you're going to encounter. That's the experience that you're going to need to have. So I think that you are so right. Way back when you said, you know, nobody really knows, because we don't know in terms of making a crystal ball prediction, you know, but we always can go back to our inner knowing and find our inner peace and our own inner connection to source, to who we really are. That, I think, is really all we can do. And we really now, sweetie, have to wrap it up. We've really done this time. I just looked at the clock and I went, oh, now I know I'm going to get the little Skype that says, hey.
It's been great, Jamil. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody out there listening. I really appreciate you lending me your ear. And thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. You all have been tuned in to the Alchemy of Light broadcast, and we have been sharing this amazing 2.5 hours with Anthony Kane. And you can find out more about him on his newly published website at jakane.cc. And I hope you are all doing very well. This has really been exciting for me. I hope you've learned something, enjoyed the ride. And I will be back in a fortnight on the 11th of August. So until then, please do take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. I am Jamil Graham, your host, signing off for today. Thank you again, Anthony, and thank you, Doug and Dawn and BBS Radio, and all the ancestors who have been with us. Bye-bye.